You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 165 of Rudolf Steiner's writings and lectures. These are lectures. These are entitled Unifying Humanity Spiritually Through the Christ Impulse, translated by Christian von Arnim, 13 lectures given in assorted cities. This is Lecture 3, given in Dornach on the 27th of December, 1915. I drew your attention yesterday to the way in which the fact of the birth of Jesus gradually conquered the hearts and souls of people, how the Christmas play and the way we were able to let it act on us basically only gradually developed into this noble and beautiful form, together with the whole Christmas mood with which it arose at the time in which it blossomed, how it was basically possible to say about the first forms of this Christmas play that people did indeed try, out of a quite profane mood, to participate in what they had seen for centuries in a way which they could not understand. The Christ child only gradually conquered human hearts, and this conquest of human hearts actually took quite a long time. When we see in the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th centuries the things which the priests at first began to play being transformed into participation by the people, then such participation, as I described to you yesterday, has not yet taken the noble form which these Christmas plays later assumed, of which we have just become acquainted with two examples. I tried to make you aware that these two plays are quite different in origin, and that this can be clearly seen. There's a footnote I'm going to read here. Sorry I didn't read it earlier. The lecture on 26 December 1915 was preceded by the performance of a shepherd's play from the Palatinate and the Oberufer Three Kings play. End of footnote. The first play has something simple and popular, so that it is easy to see that the main thing is to present how the child, in which the great cosmic spirit was later to be incarnated and active on earth, how this child entered the world, how he was received, on the one hand, by the innkeepers, the two innkeepers, and on the other hand, by the shepherds. And basically, this Christmas play, this first one which we watched yesterday, reveals specifically the difference of the reception by the innkeepers and the shepherds. That is what we particularly remember from it. The other Christmas play is quite different. It is immediately made clear to us that wise men, which for the peoples to which this applied at the time also meant wise kings, the Magi, read in the stars the significant destiny which was in store for humanity. So, we see ancient occult wisdom contained in the action of the play. And then we see, in the further course of events, how the being which now enters earth events, as foreseen by this occult wisdom, this knowledge obtained from the stars, is opposed by a figure at whose side we can clearly see evil, the principle which has fallen behind, the diabolic, the Ahrimanic and Luciferic principle, Herod. We see how the Christ principle and the Luciferic and Ahrimanic principle are set in opposition. But we also see how, in the course of events, that asserts itself, which is revealed out of spiritual spheres. The angels appear as if announcing their guidance from spiritual spheres and guide and control events, so that what Herod wants does not happen, and something else occurs. The will of human beings is filled with impulses which come from the spiritual worlds. So we have a play which, in terms of the forces within, points beyond purely earth events. If we consider how these two plays relate to one another, the one perfused with a primitive popular view, the other perfused with a wisdom that truly refers us back to the original wisdom of earth development, We will be led to reflect on what has happened in the course of time and what is connected with the full meaning of the mystery of Golgotha with regard to earth development. Let us consider that at the time in a wider sense, when the mystery of Golgotha took place, a profound wisdom about spiritual matters existed in certain circles. We refer to what existed as such profound wisdom as Gnosis. In the outer world, in the progression of the intellectual culture of Europe, it would be true to say that this Gnosis, which existed as a profound spiritual knowledge of the secrets of the spiritual world, had disappeared within the culture of Europe as far as the external world was concerned. In the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th centuries, there was precious little idea in intellectual life of what was contained in this system of knowledge. Those who knew something, I am referring to those who knew what could be known if one was a Christian priest or Christian scholar, they really knew about Gnosis because there were opponents of Gnosis in the first centuries of Christianity, and these opponents fought against Gnosis. Imagine if it were to happen today that all the books which we count among our literature and all the lecture cycles were to be weeded out, were to be burnt, so that nothing remained of them, and only the things remained which the opponents had written. And a few centuries later, someone would lay their hands on these books of the opponents, and on that basis would have to form an idea of what was written in our books. That is what it was like with Gnosis. One of the most important church authors to have written about Gnosis is Irenaeus, a pupil of Bishop Polycarp of Asia Minor, who himself was a pupil of the apostles. But Irenaeus wrote as an opponent of Gnosis. The things which were taught by the Gnostics could only be learned over the centuries by looking at what Irenaeus had written, what he had recorded in his book to refute them. So everything had to be taken into consideration, which resulted from this ancient wisdom only being reported by an opponent. You can see from this that actually the whole development of the West was designed such that something which came from ancient times was rooted out, thoroughly rooted out. Outwardly, this fact alone shows how new the start was for Western culture that was given with the mystery of Golgotha, how basically something new started everywhere. Truly, just like what might be described as a lost city buried in the earth, the ancient writings were thoroughly buried under what was now newly developed on the basis of the ancient church fathers by St. Ambrose, St. Augustine, Scotus Origina, and so on. A new start. And just like a new city rises on apparently new ground, so something new arose. A new city, but on ground in which was buried the ancient city without anyone knowing what it looked like. That is how European culture developed. But from that, it can also be seen that in our time, if there is to be a renewed spiritual deepening, it is necessary for this deepening to be achieved out of the strength of human beings themselves. Human beings themselves must find once again what was not passed down to them outwardly, at least within the course of the European development of ideas. And I cannot speak about this today because it would take us too far off the subject. There is no point in referring to the Eastern records as a substitute for the external records, which have disappeared in Western thought, for the simple reason that the Eastern records indeed provide something much, much more primitive than that which developed in the world, spreading across Asia Minor, North Africa, Southern Europe, and even partly across Central Europe. What spiritual knowledge had developed into had been thoroughly rooted out in the first centuries of Christian development. That really was only passed down to posterity through the writings of its opponents. Now these writings, which were rooted out, not only contained the knowledge, the spiritual knowledge, which related to the spiritual worlds in addition to Christ, but the application of all the comprehensive ancient spiritual wisdom to the mystery of Jesus Christ was also lost with these writings. The Gnostics tried to understand in their way, if we wish to call them Gnostics, the course of earth development, the nature of the being of Christ. The time had not yet come at that time to understand the matter in the way we understand it now, by fetching truths from the spiritual worlds themselves, which do not need to be written down, because they exist directly in the spiritual world in a living way. It was not possible for them to acquire knowledge about the being of Jesus Christ in this way. That has only become possible in our time. But in this more ancient way, certain things were known about Christ in knowledge which truly had been lost. It is only recently that a few scarce remains have been found, the Pistis Sophia text, and then the text about the secret of Jew, and readers aside, I'm pronouncing J-E-U as Jew, and of readers aside. They are now available as if through them the attention of people was also to be drawn outwardly to the fact that the knowledge of Christ we are now striving for in our way is not as stupid as the opponents of our movement would like to make out. The books of Jew, little remains of it in Coptic script, but what does remain is like a pointer. See what exists in the Gospels. That is not the only thing which filled the thinking of people in the first centuries of Christian development. The books of Jew contain information about how Christ, after the resurrection, after he had gone through the mystery of Golgotha, spoke to those who could understand him at the time, who had become his disciples. The curious thing is that the books of Jew, I mean the small fragment we have of it, speaks clearly about Christ and what he is in quite a different way from even the Gospel of John. The curious thing is that a word keeps recurring in this book, which clearly tells us that attention is to be drawn to something. And I would like to describe the thing to which attention is to be drawn by paraphrasing it as follows. If we assume that someone at that time had wanted to explain why Jesus Christ had entered earth development, he would have told those who could understand it, quote, "See, a time will come when human beings will approach the development of the consciousness soul. A time will come when human beings will have to understand the world through their external physical organs, through the organs which are essentially anchored in their physical body. The time has passed when human beings had archetypal revelations through original primitive clairvoyance. The time has passed when human beings knew something not just by applying their physical body with its tools, but by being able to use their etheric body independently of their physical body for obtaining knowledge. Human beings will now have to use only their physical body as a tool. But in future, human beings will also be able to know something of the things which hitherto were known only through the etheric body. In the external world, there will only be one sort of knowledge, which is tied to the physical body, subject to death. But knowledge about the spiritual world cannot be obtained through the tools which are tied to the physical body. To that end, a helper must come who ignites in human beings those things which only the etheric body can know. Someone must come who does not ignite what is dead in the physical body, but who ignites what is alive in the human being, what is alive in the etheric, who is with the living, who is with those things which are not physical in human beings on earth. Someone has to be there who rips out of this sluggish, dead physical body the reason which can understand the spiritual world, the reason which is in human beings and which is united with heaven, the reason which cannot be crucified by the world because it belongs to heaven, which itself crucifies the world, that is, overcomes the world." Close quote. We have to understand that human beings in earlier times, when they could not yet see Christ in his true being as he passed through the mystery of Golgotha, felt themselves united with the spiritual world with their etheric bodies in primitive clairvoyance. How the physical body grew increasingly hardened and thereby turned into an instrument, how Someone had to come, that is, Christ, to extract the living element out of the sluggish instrument of the physical body. That is what we have to understand. And now let us look at the books of Jude, how Christ, having passed through the mystery of Golgotha, speaks to those who have learned to follow him, to follow the wisdom contained in his words, quote, "I have loved you and wished to give you life," close quote. We can discern it in his phrase, quote, "and wished to give you life," close quote. He wished to take the sluggish physical body out of its sluggishness and to give what only the etheric body can give. Quote, "Jesus, the living one, is knowledge of truth," close quote. The living one, that is, the one who has passed through the mystery of Golgotha, speaks while depicting himself as the representative of life. Then the text continues, quote, "This is the book of knowledge of the invisible God by means of the concealed mysteries," close quote. That is, the mysteries which are concealed in human beings, quote, "which show the way to the chosen essence of the human being, leading in the silence to the life of the cosmic Father, in the coming of the Savior, the deliverer of the souls who will receive in themselves the word of life, which is higher than all life, in the knowledge of Jesu, the living one, who through the Father came forth from the aeon of light in the allness of the Pleroma," close quote. That is, other aeons, all the spiritual beings, quote, "in the teaching, apart from which there is no other, which Jesus, the living one, taught his apostles in saying, this is the teaching which rests all knowledge," close quote. This is how we have to imagine that the risen one, who went through the mystery of Golgotha, spoke to the disciples who had learned to belong to him. Quote, "Jesus, the living one, commenced and spoke to his apostles. Blessed is the one who has crucified the world, and the world has not crucified him," close quote, and full quote, close. Who can thus grasp that part of the human being which is not overcome by matter, by external physical matter? The apostles answered as one in saying, quote, "Lord, teach us how to crucify the world, so that it not crucify us, and we might perish and lose our lives," close quote. Quote, "Jesus, the living one, answered and said," subquote, "he who has crucified the world is the one who has found my word and has fulfilled it in accordance with the will of the one who sent me," close quote, excuse me, close subquote, continue quote. And the apostles answered, subquote, "Speak to us, Lord, so that we hear you. We have followed you with all our hearts, have left father and mother, have left vineyards and fields, have left goods, have left the magnificence of the external king, and followed you, so that you teach us the life of your Father who sent you," close subquote, close quote. And in response to this request from the apostles, Jesus Christ, the living one, now says what he has to tell them, quote, "Christ, the living one, answered and said," subquote, "the life of my Father is this, that out of the essence of the human being you receive that understanding of your soul which is not earthly," close subquote, close quote. So that is what the living one wants, that those who are his disciples learn to understand that there is a knowledge of spiritual things in the human being which can tear itself away from the physical body, which is not earthly. If they can activate that within themselves, they will understand his word. And I've got apparently a quote, subquote, "This essence of all souls, which becomes comprehensible through what I say to you in the course of my word, so that you fulfill it and are saved from the archon," close both quotes, "from the being of the aeon, this epoch," quote, subquote, "and his persecution," close quotes, the Luciferic Ahrimanic being, continue quotes, "and his persecution, which is never ending, so that you are saved therefrom. But you, my disciples, make haste to receive my word carefully, so that you recognize it, so that the archon of this aeon, that is, Ahriman Lucifer, does not quarrel with you because you can find none of his commands in me, close all quotes, who thus, says Steiner, finds his commands outside the one who went through the mystery of Golgotha. Quotes again, so that you yourself, O my apostles, fulfill my word in relation to me, and I myself make you free, and you become holy through the freedom which is immaculate. Just as the Spirit of the Holy Spirit is holy, so you too will become holy through the freedom of the Spirit of the Holy Spirit. Close subquote. Continue quote, all the apostles answered with one voice, Matthew and John, Philip and Bartholomew and James, and they said, subquote, O Jesus, you living one, whose benevolence extends across those who have found his wisdom and his form through enlightenment, O light, which in the light that has illuminated our hearts, has received the light of life as we have, O true Logos, so that through Gnosis we learned true knowledge, taught out of what is alive. Close subquote, continue quote, Jesus, the living one, answered and said, subquote, blessed is the person who has recognized this and has brought heaven down. Close all quotes, Steiner, that is, who has become aware that there is something in him which is not connected with the physical body, but which is connected with the beings of the heavens, and who introduces into events on earth what is connected with heaven in him, what is above. And then all quotes again, blessed is the person who has understood this and has brought down heaven and supported the earth and sent it to heaven, close all quotes, Steiner again, has united what is earthly in him with what is heavenly in him, so that when he passes through the portal of death with the fruits of what is earthly, he can guide the earth back to heaven through what is heavenly. Quote, the apostles answered and said, subquote, Jesus, you living one, explain to us the way in which one brings down heaven, because we followed you so that you teach us the true light, close subquote. Continue, quote, and Jesus, the living one, answered and said, subquote, the word which exists in heaven, close all quotes, Steiner again, by which he meant that which one can have as wisdom, as knowledge, independently of the physical body of human beings. All quotes again, the word which exists in heaven before earth was created, the earth which is called the world. But you, if you recognize my word, will bring heaven down, and the word will live in you. Heaven is the invisible word of the Father. But if you recognize this, you will bring heaven down. I will show you how to send the earth to heaven, how it is so that you know it. Sending earth to heaven is the hearer of the word of knowledge, who has stopped being no more than the reason of earthly human beings, but has become a heavenly human being. Close all quotes, Steiner again. Who has, thus, torn the understanding within himself away from the outer physical body? Who has stopped being an earthly human being and become a heavenly human being? His reason has stopped being earthly. It has become heavenly. Quotes again. That is why you will be saved from the archon of this aeon, close all quotes, Steiner again, from the Ahrimanic Luciferic being. Here you have a fragment which has survived, which was found again, and which could make people aware of the infinitely profound knowledge which was linked in the first Christian centuries with the secret of the mystery of Golgotha. As a rule, the theologians in our time tend to blow their top about anyone who wishes to draw attention to this or other writings in some way. They admit that they exist. That is true. They work on them externally, historically, and publish editions of them. But they are convinced, these normal theologians of our time, that these writings have to a certain extent been rightly forgotten, because they only contain all kinds of incredible fantasies which any reasonable person of today should no longer bother with, that they are not appropriate for an enlightened spirit. But in a certain sense they are an indication that through these things which we retrieve out of the wellspring of the spiritual worlds, we do connect with something which has already been in earth development, with something which only had to keep flowing subterraneously for a time, like certain waters in the Alps run subterraneously after they have flowed on the surface for a while. Then they disappear into the depths and appear again later. In the same way, spiritual knowledge has continued to flow as in subterranean worlds through the centuries, and now it must emerge again. In order that those who cannot believe at all that the spiritual sources flowing into earth existence could have come from such springs should also receive an outward indication. History has preserved a few fragments, some scraps of a rich ancient literature, which was widespread, which was great and powerful, and which is really only known about through the writings of its opponents, for example, the writings of Arrhenius, and similar people who only wanted to rebut it. Thus we have to say, the mystery of Golgotha has found its way into Western culture under extraordinarily difficult circumstances. And it started with the result of the mighty saying of Paul, which flowed out of him as he had the vision on the road to Damascus. The secret of death, of the passage through the mystery of Golgotha. That, in turn, led into the wide-ranging discussion about the way that Christ was connected with Jesus, how his divine and human nature were connected, how the three forms of manifestation of the divine are related, which entered Western cultural development as three figures, and similar things. We can say that which was human wisdom receded. The power of knowledge also receded. The power of wisdom in those people was incredibly strong, allowing them to produce the kind of thing which I just read out to you, a strong power of wisdom. It receded completely. And people much preferred to listen to those who were able to say, Jesus Christ was here on earth in person. We know that he was here because I knew Polycarp, and Polycarp knew the disciples of Jesus. That was a directly personal account. In a certain sense, belief starts in just those things which physically existed, in physical progression. As the spiritual wisdom gradually ebbed away, the belief grew in what was only physical. We could ask, what kind of a mind was Irenaeus? He was a mind who said, quote, here we have the Gnostics. They claim to know something through a reason which can act independently of the physical body. That is all wrong. That is all, as people said at the time, heretical. People must not believe that. Close quote. And he refuted it. Such opponents kept growing in number. And what, of course, remained was the mystery of Golgotha, the power of that fact, the power of that tradition. Christianity now progressed through what was handed down by tradition, what now took on the role of fact. What progressed as science actually ebbed away. And the successor of Irenaeus in our time is once again fighting against everything which is based on a real knowledge of the spiritual world. Who is the predecessor and who the successor? Irenaeus, the bishop of Lyon, who fought the Gnostics, and the Irenaeus of our times, the bishop of matter from Jena, is Ernst Haeckel. In terms of the way of thinking, there is a direct line from Irenaeus, the bishop of Lyon, to Ernst Haeckel. These things have to be seen with historical objectivity, not with the same feeling of critical sympathy or antipathy, but with complete historical objectivity. If we imagine the course of this spiritual development, we can obtain a feeling for something which has already been touched on here from a different perspective. Namely, that what people were capable of understanding could not accommodate this Christian development. Such understanding, such a spiritual grasp, is something that is meant to come only now, because people had lost the power to understand something that could only be understood spiritually, such as was the mystery of Golgotha. The way in which the mystery of Golgotha conquered humanity was not through reason, but through fact. And this fact actually also acted in a very peculiar way. Only a very weak echo now remains of this matter. But in the first centuries, when the story of how Christ appeared on earth at Christmas was told, the first chapter of the creation story was read out to begin with. A direct connection was made between the creation story, the start of the Bible, and the Christmas mystery. Now, only one such connection remains. If you look at the calendar, you have Christmas on the 25th of December and the Feast of Adam and Eve on the 24th of December. This direct connection in the calendar is the last remnant of what existed in people's consciousness. That once the Christmas festival had been set in a specific season, the creation story was thought of in association with the Christmas mystery. But it was not just that outwardly the creation story was first presented and then the Christmas mystery. People were regularly made aware of one of the most profound legends of those who wanted to show the connection between the world, the beginning of the earth, and the mystery of Golgotha. People were made aware how when Adam was driven from paradise, the tree through which he had sinned, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, was also removed from paradise. How fruits, seeds from this tree were planted on the grave of Adam, and how the tree grew out of it. And then the wood of this tree, the tree of paradise, was passed down the generations until the time when Christ appeared on earth. And this wood which had grown out of the grave, which was the grave of Adam, this wood was used to make the cross on which the Savior was suspended. This legend about the connection between the beginning of the world and the mystery of Golgotha was continually repeated in early centuries to the people who were able to understand such things. They were told the tree of paradise, through which human beings have sinned, was thrown out of paradise, and its seeds fell on the earth which covered Adam's grave. And the tree through which human beings had sinned in paradise grew again from these seeds. And the wood from this tree was passed from generation to generation until it came, by all kinds of circuitous routes, into the era of the mystery of Golgotha, and the cross on which Christ was suspended was made from this wood. This legend thus also includes the connection between the beginning of the earth and the mystery of Golgotha. But these things are so closely connected, so intimately connected, that there are certain plays which are not just plays about Christ, performed at Christmas, but paradise plays in which the mystery of Adam and Eve and the fall was directly presented to the people when Christmas, or rather Epiphany, Three Kings Day, on 6 January approached. Consider, my dear friends, the profound spiritual facts of which we are made aware in this way. We think of the Luciferic Ahrimanic temptation of the human being, of what became of human beings through Luciferic Ahrimanic temptation. We think of it as represented by the figure of Adam, who had succumbed to temptation. If we fully understand this Luciferic Ahrimanic temptation, we cannot but think that earth development would have turned out quite differently if there had been no Luciferic Ahrimanic temptation of the human being. Things would have turned out quite differently. But this Luciferic Ahrimanic temptation only has meaning in relation to life on earth in a physical body. It can thus only acquire meaning from the moment at which we enter life on earth out of the spiritual world through birth, or let us say through conception. The Luciferic Ahrimanic temptation cannot have any meaning for the life between death and a new birth, because it has its meaning here in life on earth. When we therefore see the child enter life on earth, we experience it in the right way. If we say, quote, "You appear, soul that you are, here in the flesh. You appear out of a cosmic sphere, which is still untouched by Luciferic Ahrimanic nature. You only enter Luciferic Ahrimanic nature as you increasingly grow into the flesh." Close quote. And that is how we can look at the child. That is how we can look at the child in sensing a spiritual cosmic mystery. As they enter earth development, human beings are already predetermined through their earlier incarnations to grow as one with the flesh. But people should also experience on one occasion what it means to enter the earth without being predestined for earthly life. For this thought to awaken in human beings, the thought about what actually lives in humans as a being through which they are connected with something heavenly, sun-like. That this should awaken in humans is why the Christ child conquered the spiritual development of humanity. And this Christ child conquered the spiritual development of humanity in the way that he was able. There were basically two streams in the whole of Christian development. We are well able to understand these two streams. To begin with, Christ entered the world through two bodies, through the Jesus from the line of Nathan and the Jesus from the line of Solomon. He entered through the Jesus from the line of Nathan as what I might call the earth child. Footnote, editor's note, some readers have suggested that this sentence should be amended to read correctly, quote, he entered through the Jesus from the line of Solomon as what I might call the earth child, close quote. The editors did not feel that they could go along with such an amendment. The original shorthand note clearly says Nathan, and that Rudolf Steiner might have made a slip of the tongue can be excluded in the context of the other content. This lecture highlights in particular the childlike nature of the Jesus from the line of Nathan, whereas the Jesus from the line of Solomon is described as the bringer of heavenly wisdom, as can also be seen from the following pages. End of footnote. I'll read that sentence again. He entered through the Jesus from the line of Nathan as what I might call the earth child. You need only look at how I have explained it in the lecture cycles and also entitled The Spiritual Guidance of the Individual and Humanity. Through the Jesus from the line of Nathan, Christ entered earth such that this Jesus from the line of Nathan was like a being who had been preserved from earth development up to that time, like the substance from the beginning of the earth. But the Jesus from the line of Solomon, this was progressive development which had gone through many, many earth incarnations. Two paths, then, which were subsequently to converge in the way I have set out. But now, imagine all of this happening in a time in which spiritual wisdom is dying out, in which there is no way of understanding these things. The infinite profundity occurs that there were two Jesus children, through which Christ is to enter the world. The infinite profundity occurs which the people who understand nothing about the whole thing, although they are called upon to do so by their office, today slander and brand as heretical. The event occurs which could only have been understood with that wisdom which has been rooted out. It is hardly surprising that this fact has happened in a way of which an understanding can only gradually be achieved, once again, through our science. That is why the following was endeavored. When more of the old wisdom was still trickling through drop by drop, people wanted to place even greater value on the appearance of Jesus Christ on earth, on his entry into the great events of the world, and so Three Kings Day was set as the day when the Lord appeared, which is 6 January. But that is connected to a greater extent with the Jesus from the line of Solomon, with the Jesus who appeared as a king, who entered from the royal line. He was indeed understood to a greater extent through what was royal occult knowledge. In contrast, the other one, the Jesus from the line of Nathan, who really carried nothing of what had happened on earth in his substance, was set in deepest winter, which is now the Christmas festival. People did not understand that these things belonged together and even set the birth dates apart, because in centuries further in the past, 6 January was indeed felt to be the birth date of Jesus. But the feeling that there were two birth dates can easily be explained by anyone with a knowledge of the two Jesus children. There are even two versions of the way Jesus was thought about. The one relates more to the Jesus who entered without previously having been connected with what, through nations and the estates and races, created differentiation on earth. The Jesus who enters and can be understood with the simplest popular feeling, the Luke Jesus, the Jesus from the line of Nathan. The other Jesus, the Jesus from the line of Solomon, is better understood with what is heavenly wisdom, the wisdom through which those things trickled through that still remain as droplets of ancient occult wisdom. It would not be at all incorrect to say, we saw the first play about Jesus, the simple play about Jesus, to which the ancient remains of occult wisdom cannot be applied in any way, that is, the Jesus child from the line of Nathan. In the other one, the wisdom is at work, which still remained, the Jesus who entered the world from royal stock, the second play which acted on us. People were not aware of it, but the two Jesus children continued to have an effect in that people, created such fundamentally different plays about these things. Thus I wanted to give some indications to begin with about the way in which the Paradise play and the Christmas play coalesced, so that everything together has a meaning. We will speak more about it tomorrow. But today I want to commend to you once more the words I said in conclusion yesterday, and also in the course of our considerations, that these Christmas plays, in a certain sense even the simplest one, are also an admonition, and they are also an admonition for all those who heard them. We should endeavor once again to return to a kind of cosmic Christmas in a spiritual sense. Christ should once again be born in a spiritual way, at least for human understanding. All the work in spiritual science is actually a kind of Christmas festival, a birth of Christ in human wisdom. The question is whether the numbers of people can be found who understand that. Indeed, sometimes the farmers could be heard saying things to one another as they sat there when such a Christmas play, like the first one yesterday, was performed in earlier centuries. The whole community came, and the farmers sat there. Then this might happen. One of the farmers might say to another, quote, "Tell me, are you a shepherd or an innkeeper?" Close quote. Then he might reflect on whether he was a shepherd or an innkeeper. I think, in respect of the way Christ is seen in more modern science, we might also ask people, quote, "Are you an innkeeper or a shepherd?" Close quote. Because we can hear the innkeepers fulminating and saying, quote, "How dare you come to my door? Clear off! Go and find somewhere else to stay, not here," close quote. The others are the shepherds. There are also skeptics among them. There is Mops, who does not want to understand the bright light, but who nevertheless, out of a certain sense of truth, allows himself to be led by Corydon. I think the question and answer in their soul, with which the farmers in the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries left the Christmas play they had just watched, might well give us pause for thought. Quote, "Well, tell me, are you an innkeeper or a shepherd?" Close quote. Let us hope, my dear friends, that gradually a good many shepherds arise in our way, so that the innkeepers, who can after all be heard in great numbers, are gradually silenced. The end of Lecture 3.